Okay, here we go. Relationships. Been talking about different aspects of relationships. How to resolve conflict has been kind of the focus. Tonight I want to talk about tools. Some things that we do, that we can specifically do to make relationships better. Or at the end, depending on how much time we have, things that we can do to make the relationship worse. So starting out, we will deal with some specific tools. First of all, some of the verses that we have dealt with. 2 Corinthians 5:18, "And all things are of God, who hath reconciled us to himself by Jesus Christ, and hath given to us the ministry of reconciliation, to wit that God was in Christ reconciling the world unto himself, not imputing their trespasses unto them, and hath committed unto us the word of reconciliation." We can have restored relationships. All relationships are broken, but through Jesus Christ, relationship with God and our relationship with one another can be restored. Now, one of the things I think is really important, and even talking about tonight, is that we have the ministry of reconciliation. Sometimes in relationships, we don't think that we have any power, that we think that it's the other party that controls everything. But we have the power and the ministry of reconciliation. There's things we can do in our relationship to make them better. One thing we can do is, there's one thing you can always do to make a relationship better. Pray. You can always pray for the other person. Always. And then there are other things we can do to make it better. We contribute to the current success or failure of the relationship. Some of the other verses we've used, Romans 12:18, "If it be possible, as much as lieth in you, live peaceably with all men." This verse, I think, indicates God understands that relationships take work. As much as lieth in you, you do have the ability to change relationships. Matthew 7:12, "Therefore all things whatsoever you would that men should do unto you, do ye even so to them, for this is law and the prophets." How else would we word that?
Do unto others as
you'd have them do unto you. The golden rule. You know, we want to be treated nice, but sometimes we are not very nice to others. Colossians 3:13, "Forbearing one another, forgiving one another. If any man have a quarrel against any, even as Christ forgave you, so also do ye." Romans 5:8 says, "We were the enemies of God, and he set out to reconcile us to himself by Jesus Christ." So if God can reconcile us, and through Christ, we can reconcile relationships with others. If any man have a quarrel against any, we are commanded, instructed to resolve the conflict. The text verse I want to use for tonight in dealing with tools for relationships. This verse has to do with husbands and wives. But tools and relationships, these tools we're going to talk about, would work in any kind of relationship, whether it be husband-wife, whether it be parent-to-child, or friend-to-friend, whatever the relationship might be. "Likewise, ye husbands, dwell with them according to knowledge, giving honor unto the wife as the weaker vessel, and as being heirs together of the grace of life, that your prayers be not hindered." I've already used the latter part of this, prayers not be hindered. Our relationship with one another affects our relationship with God. Tonight, I want to focus on the first part of this verse. Dwell with them according to knowledge. What does that mean? In relationships, knowledge can be an asset. So there are some things we're to do by knowledge that would make the relationship better,
and would keep us from hindering our relationship with God. Sometimes we want to just come to the relationship, and whoever we are and whatever we are, everybody just has to accept us for what we are. If I'm offensive, you just got to live with it. How well is that going to work in a relationship? Not very well. I have a responsibility to conduct myself in such a way that promotes relationships, right? And a verse that Paul, a concept that Paul used, he says, I become all things to all men that I might win some. Now, I understand that he said that in relationship to win people to Christ, but he was willing to do things in those relationships to make those relationships better so that he could win them to Christ. He was willing to change. He was willing to work on things. And so there was knowledge. Peter suggests that knowledge can improve the relationship. And so tonight I'm going to talk about tools, things that we can do, understanding who we are and who the other person in the relationship is, and how we approach them with knowledge and understanding can help make the relationship better. Sometimes we just want the other person to just be happy, but there are things in relationships that can make them unhappy and can make them happy and productive. Thoughts? Okay, the very first tool is called the XYZ formula. XYZ formula. Now, the very first thing when you hear these, you're going to think, man, that would be awkward. That sure is structured. But one of the things I can tell you is that these work. And setting down with whoever that you're struggling with in a relationship and having this kind of dialogue might be awkward, but wouldn't that moment of awkwardness be better than continuing to have a struggling relationship? Sometimes we don't want things to be better if it takes effort on my part. If the other person would just get over it, it would be fine, right? That's kind of our attitude. So what is the XYZ formula? In situation X, when you do Y, I feel Z. Remember one of the things that gets the other person going? What's the word? You. Okay? What offsets that? I. One of the things that sometimes happens is we accuse somebody and we use phrases like, you always, okay? And we're accusatory, and we state these statements of fact, you know, you never, you always, and we accuse people of things, and then all they have to do is say, once, I've never done that, or I do that, and then your argument is lost. The other thing is that you don't know the intent of the other person, what they were doing. You shouldn't do that because, you know, when you do that, this is how you come across. Well, you don't know their intent. One of the things that you cannot, the person cannot combat is the way you feel. Your feelings are your feelings. So dealing with how you feel, okay? So that's really important. In situation X, when you do Y, I feel Z. Let me give you an example. When we're driving down the road and you turn on the radio without asking me, I feel I don't matter to you. Situation. When you do, I feel. Now, if we were going to attack character, what might we say? How would we say that?
Mom's turned the radio on when we're in the car.
Yeah. Or we could say, who made you king of the radio, right? Right? We can use accusatory tones, okay?
So give me some examples. Let's work through this. Give me a situation. Situation X. When you do Y, I feel Z. Somebody give me a sentence of situation X. When you do Y, I feel Z. Can anybody do that? Okay. Does anybody want to do that?
No way. We don't want to do that.
Can you think of one?
When you come home late from work, I feel you're avoiding me.
Okay. When you come home late from work, what's the situation when you come home?
Late.
I feel like you're avoiding me. Okay? That would be okay, because then the person, what's a bad way to state that?
You don't care about me.
Yeah. You're never around. You see the negative to that versus, you know, that is fair. When you come home, what do you say, late? Okay? I feel like you don't care about me. So you can address those issues and the feelings, and now you have a situation to deal with that you can deal with. You know, why are you coming home late? I mean, is it a job situation? Is there, you know, other things? And so now when you state it in this formula, when you state, well, you don't care about me because you don't ever come home, what do you start to deal with? I mean, it's very difficult to deal with those. So this gives the other person an opportunity to deal with what the issue is, what they're doing, and your feelings. I know it looks silly. Trust me, it works. Try it. Let's do another one. Give me another one.
It is a powerful tool. Anybody else want to try one?
When you answer the phone when we're in the middle of a conversation, I feel important to you.
Okay. So when you answer the phone, when we're in the middle of a conversation, I feel unimportant to you. Now, what might you say if you weren't using this? How might you respond in a negative way?
You love that phone more than me.
Okay, good.
Everyone's more important to you than I am.
Everyone's more. Now, how do you deal with that? No, I really love you. Oh, you show up by that phone, right? So you get this ongoing argument by how we respond. This, you have a situation, you have something you're doing, you can deal with the feeling.
So how would you deal with that? You can talk about if it's a maybe an understanding that the phone calls are important. Maybe it's an understanding that not all phone calls are as important as the conversation is going on. So maybe there is an act of rudeness that's going on that needs to be dealt with. But until we bring it up in such a way that it can be dealt with, oftentimes we approach subjects that make them worse. There's no way to resolve them, the way in which we approach them. By simply using this formula, it gives the other person an opportunity to take a look at what they're doing, to see what the situation is, to see what their actions is, to see what your feelings are, and then they can approach it. Now, that doesn't mean that it's still not going to be an easy conversation, but this at least gets you started without igniting a volatile conversation right off where you will never have resolution. Does that make sense?
It forces you to identify a behavior, and it forces you to identify your feelings and take responsibility for your feelings, is what this formula, it puts, instead of making you responsible for what I'm feeling, I feel this way, and I'm taking responsibility for it in this sense, and this is what causes it. It's the behavior, and it's not you as a person.
And then you can deal with the behavior. And maybe the behavior is okay, And maybe the feelings is what has to be dealt with.
I mean, there's times in which phone calls may be so important, they need to be dealt with, and then we have to deal with the feelings. That's okay, too. But this gives you those three items to deal with. Other thoughts? Does it make sense? Yeah.
Well, this brings it out in the open, so the person that answers the phone can make the step in the system. I'm expecting a phone call. I would like to answer it right away.
This gives all kinds of opportunities to deal with the situation.
Absolutely. Yes?
Well, I think this would be really important in to use this formula in a child, parent-child, teenagers, when they're old enough and older children, when they're old enough, instead of arguing with mom and dad or talking back to mom and dad, and of course then there's just, instantly mom and dad are mad and they don't want to listen to anything you say, where if the individual, the younger person can go to mom and dad and say, okay, in this situation, this is, I don't know, when I don't come home on time, okay? When I don't come home on time, and when I come in the door, you just yell at me or you embarrass me in front of my, and then, you yell at me and it embarrasses me. I feel embarrassed in front of my friends. So then that would be a way of maybe diffusing mom and dad a little bit. I mean, that would kind of, okay, I stop and think how they felt rather than, the rule was broken or whatever, but okay, how can maybe I can react differently in dealing with the breaking of the rule?
And that's the thing. Sometimes we feel justified because the child breaks the rule or a spouse does something, mm-hmm. and so we feel so justified, so we handle the situation terribly.
Right.
And then when they get upset about it, it's like, wait, you broke the rule. And so you make a great point, and that this gives us a way to communicate to the other person the three things that are important: the situation, the actions, the feelings. And it works. Parents can do it with children, because sometimes we say things that if we use this, when you come home late in this situation, when you do this, this is how I feel, and as a result, here's the actions. But oftentimes, we just jump to the conclusion. And this is very powerful in any relationship. If you're having a relationship with an employee or employer, I've used this. Somebody that I have a hard time communicating with, if I will step back and say, okay, think about what I want to deal with and how I want to word it, this works. It diffuses the situation. It gives you something to talk about.
It's funny because I was just thinking of it. I do that all the time at work. But it's very hard in intimate personal relationships to follow that same path. And it's very successful at work. I don't know why it doesn't translate over when it's something that's even more closer to your heart or to your own actions and responsibilities. It's harder to do that and not be defensive enough.
And I think there's sometimes one reason we do it is because we understand that at work it's an intellectual relationship. And so we can intellectualize that and say, okay, to deal with this person, I have to do this. Well, when we come to relationships at home, parents, children, spouses, that is an emotional relationship, and we expect them to sometimes be able to read our minds, that we aren't always fair, and we want the other person to know already what they should be doing. And there's all kinds of other things, but that's part of it. In order for somebody to do something, we have to state what it is for them. I saw a hand somewhere. Yeah?
I know the problem I had much growing up there in Scotland, I expected more out of them. And so, I didn't do this. I just expected them to know better.
Yeah, and so we don't state what the expectation is. Absolutely. And so then when they don't have a full understanding of where they're coming from,
that doesn't mean they shouldn't, but sometimes a reinforcement of the principles we expect people to live by in relationships, absolutely. Other thoughts?
Mm-hmm. What I've seen, and when we've dealt with different people in different situations, that there's a lot of people who have difficulties in their relationships with different parts of this, but there have been a lot of people who have a problem even identifying what they're feeling like and putting those in words that they, it's not something they've ever talked about, is how they feel. And to distinguish the different emotions that they're experiencing and to identify the behavior that's causing that and to separate it, those are not skills that a lot of people have. And they struggle in a lot of those areas as far as distinguishing what is a behavior that a person's doing without assigning that this is their character. Or I'm angry, but I'm also all of these other things. And what's the underlying feelings? Because I feel neglected, or because I don't feel valued, or because I don't feel a lot of different things. But a lot of people don't even have the skills to verbalize situations in this formula.
The other thing is we often retract, so we don't state the situation or what the person is doing, and so there's nothing to fix. And so we now attack the person.
Absolutely. Thoughts? Does it make sense? Try it. Work on it. Memorize it. Situation X, when you do Y, I feel Z. It does work.
We know their motivation, yeah. And we don't always. Often you're wrong in what you're assuming the motivator is for that behavior.
Right. And this gives an opportunity to have a dialogue. And if you're right, then it gives the person to take responsibility for what they do and to fix it.
Questions? Any questions? Sharing withholds. Withholds are things that we could and should say, but we withhold it. And remember the slide... I meant to put it up, but I didn't have it. The slide that I had on the article that said, good relationships share 5 positive things to every 1 negative. You remember that? And then bad relationships have 1 positive to 1 negative. You think about that, that's not that much different. Good relationships are 5 positives to 1 negative. Bad relationships are 1-to-1. Even in bad relationships, people are saying positive things. Even in bad relationships. So the thing is that oftentimes in the relationship, there are things that should be said. And one of the things that happens is there is something that will go on. The person will do something, and it will annoy you, and you will withhold it. Maybe there's other people around. Maybe you think it's not that big of a deal, and you withhold it. And then a couple hours later, they do something else, and you withhold it. And then have you ever, the person do some little something, and then you just blow them away? You give them all kinds of things? That's withholding. We do that on the positive side, too. Have you ever thought... that you appreciate what they do, maybe just what they do in everyday life. Having a job, working, cooking, your spouse looks nice, and you don't take the time to say those positives. Well, isn't it interesting? We don't ever build those up and just lambast them with positives. Here's 15 positives. We don't ever do that. But we do say, here's 15 negatives, right? So the issue with withholds... Sharing withholds, you can't do this in the middle of a conflict, okay? This is maintenance. That's the thing I want you to understand. In the middle of a fight, you don't say, wait, let's do share withholds. It's not going to work, okay? This is a maintenance issue. as you start seeing the withholds building up, and before you blast the person with 15 negatives, you do the maintenance and you say, "We need to do, we need to share withholds." Okay, what does that look like? Each party writes three withholds. Three things. Two positive, one negative. Okay, the first thing you're going to do is you're going to say, "I can get three negatives. I can't think of a positive." That's the first thing. Some of you, we think different. Anytime this is approached, when Joyce and I have had different conversations, I always have a hard time thinking about them, coming up with them. It's not that she doesn't ever do anything positive, okay? But it takes me a minute to think about it. So how do you deal with that? You need to say, "Okay, give me 10 minutes and we'll come back." If you take a few minutes and think about it, you'll start thinking of them and they'll start coming very quickly. Now, oftentimes, the person who approaches it, usually it's the beginning of a negative. They have a negative they want to approach. That's okay. So the other person needs to come up with a negative, two positive. Each people will come up with two negatives, two positives. Okay? Any thoughts before we go on? Okay. First party shares one positive, one negative, one positive. Okay. Does that make sense? One positive. "I like the meal that you cooked the other day. It was very good." "When you raised your voice at me in front of people, I didn't care for that at all. Yesterday at the association, you looked wonderful." That's true, by the way. The food thing wasn't. She hasn't cooked in a long time. I made the food thing up. The fight thing wasn't true, but the last one was true. Okay. Response. The person responding. The only thing you can say is thank you. Trust me, you will want to say more. Not to the positives, but to the negatives. You will want to say more. You will feel attacked. Okay? But we're focusing on the negative, but we're also remembering the positive. All you can say is thank you. Okay? Second party, you can't say, "Wait, I got three more, I'll be right back." That is what we want to do. You got to stick to your original three. You can't change them, especially your negative. Stick to your original three. The key to this, no words except thank you in regards to this. You can talk about other things. No words except thank you for this for at least 30 minutes. What's the fascinating thing that happens here is that when we state how we feel about something, and very smart to use the XYZ when you state the negative, give the situation, give what the person did, give how you feel. It's a smart formula to use. When you do that and you give the person 30 minutes, oftentimes the person who gives it, just getting the other person to understand the situation, that often is enough. Knowing that the person is heard is often enough. Oftentimes, the very first thing you want to say after your time has lapsed is, "Do we need to deal with these?" Lots of times, if you will say, "I heard you," the person, oftentimes you will not need to deal with them. If you do, you deal with it. But if you don't state it in the XYZ formula and just the negative is just an attack of the character, that's not going to work, right? We have to state it so that it's something that we can deal with. Does this make sense?
doing the negatives, you do it with the XYZ,
the negative.
How you feel.
Right.
Okay. Yeah. Not just that you do this.
You can, depending on the situation, but one of the things is the XYZ formula works. It gives the situation, it gives the action, it gives the feeling. If it's just something that is an action, you know, in the group the other day you said that,
and that hurt my, I mean, that's an XYZ formula right there. So, but depending on what it is, we can just state what the problem is in the negative. But oftentimes, if we don't give the situation, especially the action and the feeling, then there's nothing to deal with, and the person feels attacked. But if we give the action and the feeling, then there's something to resolve. That is so important. We have to have something to resolve. Comments?
Something similar to this, when I was trained to be a driver trainer, and I had to go to a class, and they was teaching you how to teach a class, basically. And so we would have to teach a short portion of the class, and then everybody in the class had to critique you, but the way they had to do it was, you know, I can't remember the number, but there were so many positives, and they could only get one negative. And everybody around the room did that, and then you didn't respond, you just took it. But you know what? That wasn't... at first I thought, oh my goodness, these people, you know, but it wasn't that intimidating, and I learned from those negatives, you know, and the positive gave me encouragement to go on, but then I learned from the negative, and it wasn't as scary as it sounds.
And it worked, didn't it?
It's the same,
it's taking the exact same concept and putting it here. The other thing I want to talk, go ahead.
Well, like you said, this has to be in a good relationship. This is a maintenance issue, not a conflict resolver. This isn't, if you have a major issue going on in a relationship, this isn't going to solve it. This is something that you do in a good relationship to deal with those everyday issues that come up that can start building walls and dividing the relationship.
So you don't blast the person. That's what this is about. The other thing I want to talk about, I didn't put it up here, but one thing about tools, communication and relationship is so important. And one of the things that's interesting is for husbands and wives, I'm going to talk about that relationship for just a second. Us guys, we want to talk
about the relationship if it's broken. If we talk, that makes us feel that the relationship is broken. That's kind of the guy's philosophy. For the ladies, talking about the relationship is how it is maintained. So one of the problems is, if we sit down to talk, the guy automatically is, you know, well, what's wrong? What's your problem now? And the woman is like, well, I don't have a problem yet, but you're causing one. You know?
Give it a minute.
Yeah, we're just about there. So she comes and says, I want to talk. It's like, what do I do this time? Maintaining the relationship, that's how women do it, through conversation, and guys fix things through conversation. We fix. We don't maintain relationships through conversation. Okay. We need to learn to do that. One of the things, a tool that we've used is, anybody have a busy life? You ever get so busy it's hard to... I bet you do. We do. And there were times in which we're so busy that we don't have conversation for a week. We have activities and we say hi to each other, but we don't sit down and have a conversation of what are you doing, how are you, where you're at, you know, what is important to you, how's your mom doing, you know, those kinds of things. You often don't get to have those conversations. And one of the things that we have done when we're really busy is say 30 minutes a day, we're going to talk. We've even done it, gotten so busy where it's 30 minutes every other day, and we've literally set the timer. You might think that sounds silly, but how many days are you going where you're not getting any conversation? So tools are important, and that conversation is really important. Conversation to the relationship is important. And guys might think, oh no, 30 minutes. But trust me, once you get going...
Does the guy have to talk?
You know, sometimes all you have to do is say yes, dear, and she'll keep going. You know, sometimes we feel like you don't have to carry the conversation. Ladies, share, you know, and that's really, really important. Yes?
Probably the biggest thing is not necessarily to talk, but to actually listen.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, are you actively, you know, talking? Part of that, the most important thing is listening. Are you listening?
If you checked out, you know, after 3 minutes, you're going to be in trouble, guys.
Yes, Steve, you do have to show up and share it. They need to know what's going on in your life, too.
Then I might have a feeling.
Well, yeah, I can tell that.
Positive conversation in a relationship is a powerful maintenance along with this. I didn't put it up as a tool, but it is very, very powerful. Any comments here?
One of the most simple tools that I come across,
this is not original, but this is such a powerful tool, scale 1 to 10. This works really well in all kinds of relationships, two different areas. Scale 1 to 10. Somebody comes and sit down, and I ask them, one of the first things I do, I ask them how rate their relationship on a scale of 1 to 10. And the first question is almost always asked, can we go negative? No negative numbers, okay? I've had that asked. 1. The very first question I will ask, what can the other person do to move you up the scale? It is powerful. What can your mate do? What can your friend do? What can your child do to make that relationship better? Oftentimes, the reason relationships aren't better is we don't know what you need. This is a powerful way to communicate what I need. Try it. Think of a relationship. Give it a number. Maybe it's your relationship with your parents, relationship with your spouse. Give it a number. 1 is bad, 10 is good. If you give it a 7, what one thing could you do to make it an 8? What one thing can the other person do, excuse me, to make it an 8? What can they do to move that up the scale? It works. This is a powerful tool. Any questions on the relationship, where we're at? It never worries me when somebody says 1. I've dealt with relationships that were with 1, and when we were done, they were 7 and 8s. The issue is identifying where you're at, what the other person can do, and if the other person will engage in the relationship, all relationships can move up scales.
You're not going to take a relationship that is a 1 and change one behavior and make it a 10, but right. You might make it a 2.
And making a 2 in 3 months, you might make it a 3. And in 3 months, it's a long-term process. So if you're a 1, you got to start working on the 2. Okay? But you can get there.
Does that make sense? And if you're static, if you're staying at a 7, you will eventually move down. No relationship can just maintain one thing if two people aren't working on it. Does that make sense? So relationships that aren't focusing on areas that need to be worked on, this works. Scale of 1 to 10. I often ask, some of you know, I've asked some of you this. I asked Joyce, where are we at today? She asked me from time to time, where are we at? And sometimes it's not a worry that the husband might say a 7 and the wife say 3. It's not uncommon that the wife is lower than the husband. It doesn't matter. The point is we want to move the husband to the 8 and the wife to the 4. If we keep moving them up, that's okay. Does that make sense? Questions, comments?
Everything?
Okay. How important is it to me? This scale 1 to 10 works in one other way. Have you ever been in a situation where everybody has an opinion and you're paralyzed because everybody has an opinion? Where do you want to go eat? Well, oftentimes with that issue, nobody has a choice, right? Okay? Nobody cares. So in that, and we'll talk about that in just a second, but if everybody has an opinion, you know, McDonald's and Burger King or whatever, what you do is you say, how important is it to me? How important is it to you? Buying furniture. I have an opinion. We bought furniture a couple of years ago. I had an opinion. And this is one of the things we used. For me, what the furniture looked like was a 1. I had an opinion, but it wasn't important. Okay, maybe a 2 or 3. But to Joyce, it was a 7 or 8. So in that situation, who should we go with? We should go with whose it's important. Now, you can't always say a 10. Oh, it's a 10. You can't use that to get your way. Be honest. But we often have opinions, but they're not necessarily important. And so we can give the person an idea. And sometimes when you're at a bypass and you have opinions, you can say, well, how important is that to you? We use that a lot, don't we? And it works. And most of the time, one person is above the 5 and the other person is below the 5. And it varies for us. Now, once in a while, it will be important to both of us and you have to have more dialogue to get there. But oftentimes, this will break an impasse real quickly. How important is it to you? If it's not important, the other person gets their way that time and you move on. Questions on the scale of 1 to 10? Okay. This is specific to married couples. Wives, would you end up being married if your husband never took you out on a date? Not to them. Not to them, okay? Not to them.
Exactly.
It is a good point. Okay.
One of the things that is interesting is we use things like courtship, those terms. We woo our
spouse, our mate. And then once we have conquered them, we go off and we do our own life. We now conquer our careers or whatever. And the relationship suffers because we don't ever have a time that is important to the couple. One of the things that I think is most important is date night. Every married couple has to have a date night. That's what got you married, is the romance. I got husbands doing this to their wives, their ears. Don't listen to this. Minimum once a month, should be once a week. Joyce and I have designated Friday nights. Now sometimes we go out on double dates. Next Saturday, right? We're going to go with some other friends, and it's going to be something we want to do. So this date night is really important. Now you might think, well, we can't afford to go on a date night once a week. It doesn't have to cost money. Remember when you were dating, a date could be going to the park, and you were thrilled to go to the park and sit there and just talk? You remember that, Brother Steve? No? Okay. So it doesn't have to cost anything. Doesn't have to be expensive. It can be an activity. Now, how do you decide? One of the things that's going to happen for the guys, it's not fair for you to have to do it all the time. That's not going to work. You're going to run out of ideas, okay? So what we do is every other week we rotate. Now, sometimes we get busy and that falls by the side and we have to take it back up, okay? But what we do is on date night, one night Joyce will pick whatever she wants to do. And I sometimes go and watch a silly chick flick. Okay?
Shopping's not a date.
Well, I trust me. And that's when you want to make sure that this counts as a date, right? You want to make sure you're getting credit. Make sure you're getting credit. This is a date, right? Okay.
But it takes the pressure off of how do I please you? How do I meet those needs? If I want to go shopping and have dinner and go to dessert, then that's what I need to ask for, and I take responsibility for it. My turn to plan date night, And I don't worry about pleasing him because I know next week he's going to do what he wants to do. This night, we're going to go shopping and we're going to go have dessert and I'm going to be happy and he's going to go and he's going to participate and he's going to have a good time. The next week, maybe we go to a ball game and he chooses whatever it is he wants to do. And that way, half the time I'm getting what I want and the other half I'm getting to do what my husband wants, which is also a blessing.
And the problem is, if we do the date night where I am responsible for pleasing her, I can't read her mind. Plus, if I'm trying to please her, and if it's something I really don't want to do, that's not fair. So, you know, the thing is, the key about date night isn't what you do. So you might do some things that you don't want to, like shopping. The key to date night is what? Spending time with the person.
And
that's the key.
Some of their needs.
Right. And so the thing with date night for us, if you have to make it where half the time you're picking and the other half the other person's picking. Questions?
So, like you were talking about, you're going to do something with another couple.
Yeah.
So, you're not, at that point, you're not really focusing on each other.
No.
But it's still something you enjoy doing.
We both enjoy doing, and it doesn't take, it's not a whole, okay, this is the one you pick. You pick it. You know, this is neither one of us pick. So, in that case, we just continue. Whoever is supposed to pick, then the other person picks. And the thing about other relationships are important to our relationship too.
And so that's, going and spending that time with other people is good too. And that counts. Yeah.
We have people who are friends to our marriage that are invited into our marriage to help us with those things. And we are that to other marriages. And we combine that activity often, that it is with either of those groups of people. And then there's other people that are just fun to be with, and we do those things too because it's, and they are supportive of our marriage, we're supportive of theirs, and it's mutually enjoyable.
Does that make sense? So you can't make that type of activity all the time because that's not going to help all the time build a relationship. But it's good for the relationship to enjoy other couples also. That's really important. You don't want to be just
two islands. I mean, that doesn't make sense either.
And one of the best things we've ever done for our relationship is helping other people with their relationships because it says, oh, okay, how are we doing there?
Yeah, if you get a chance to mentor another couple, that will, you have to focus also on what you're doing right and wrong. Any other thoughts? Any other tools?
With Greg and I, when we moved in with his mom, that's something we started, but lately we let it slide.
We do that. You know, we go through spurts in which, you know, our life can get busy and it's easy to let other things fall, and sometimes we'll look at each other and say, we need a date night. I mean, this isn't working. We've got to get back on the track here. And you know, it's so easy to say, okay, we'll always do it. And sometimes in our life, where we're at in our life, it's easy to maintain this.
Sometimes we have to fight to make that day a priority. The other thing about date night, whatever day you set aside, is that if I have something that comes up, I cannot supersede that date without getting her permission. And vice versa. And that's really, really important. That's really, it's the quickest way to show the person isn't important if you're always canceling. So that's, you have to. The other thing is, if you have kids, we did this when we had kids. We did our family activities, and we did those on a weekly basis, and then did our dates differently. Families, it's really easy to not do things as family, and you have to schedule that too. Or it won't happen.
Only maintenance that your relationships need. But I heard someone say recently, and I thought it was really probably well said, was that you need a date night once a week. You need something to celebrate once a month. You need a getaway quarterly, and you need yearly a retreat of some sort to really actually work hard on the marriage. And I thought there's probably some people that have experienced some growth
probably
there that
some
needed.
Probably some wisdom in that. But I can tell you that
you got together as a couple because you were doing fun things together. And if as married people you're no longer doing fun things, life is just happening to you, you're not going to be enjoying the other person. you got to energize that relationship by doing some fun things together. You have to do that. You owe it to your marriage to do that. Thoughts? Yes?
As far as doing it with children and family things, but isn't it also really important that you separate that? I mean, that husband and wife have got to, because I mean, when especially when kids are little, mm-hmm. and my daughter, I know, and her husband, they really struggle with that because their kids are little, and you know what you do with them, and but they so need
you
that
have to have
that time together. It's just really, really important because they just get all consumed with these kids and the busyness of life and jobs and it's really a struggle.
At any stage in our life, we can get consumed. And it becomes a struggle to do this. And family night, you know, for Joyce and I now, it's different.
We don't have little kids or kids at home. But when they were home, I mean, you have to balance family night and date night. And those are the glues that keep those families together.
And the best thing you can do for your children is to have a good marriage.
Absolutely, yeah. And so if you have kids, you can't just do family nights. You have to also do date nights. Yes.
A thought occurred to me, and I thought of it before. Young couples with children, it's so hard to find somebody they can trust to babysit and stuff like that. And some of the places that the child would be comfortable in. I would think as a church, we should be able to provide that.
Absolutely, and I know people who babysit as for others, and obviously for families, with little kids, date night's not going to happen once a month. I mean, sometimes it's once a quarter, you're doing good. So I understand that. I understand this is a suggestion. But what happens is you're going to look at it. If it doesn't happen, you're going to think, we need some time here.
Thoughts? Any last thoughts? I have other, but the other stuff I have is going to take a while, so we're going to stop there. Any questions or comments about tools? Sometimes you look at these and people say, well, you schedule it, and it's like, if you don't schedule it, it doesn't happen. You got, scheduling things isn't a bad thing. We want life to just happen and it be romantic.
We schedule the important things in our life.
Yeah, we do. And if your marriage isn't important, then you got to schedule it. Any last thoughts? We're going to dismiss. Okay, let's all stand.